Hello and welcome to Rogue Intel Prime, episode number 8 for Wednesday, February 4th, 2015. I am Duff.
And I'm Carrie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
You know, it's been a long and very, very productive week for Rogue Intel. On Monday night, we interviewed Eustace Conway, so we'll have part one of that on later on in the show. Got a new Dynamics processor for the studio, and got that hooked up, and lots of good stuff. What about yourself?
Same old grind.
Well, at least it's predictable.
Very true.
Well, with that said, let's get right into the headline.
Well, our good friend Punxsutawney Phil has decided we're going to have 6 more weeks of winter weather.
You know what I say about that?
This is pitiful. 1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat. What a hype. Sound like they used to mean something in this town. They used to pull the hog out and they used to eat it. You're hypocrites, all of you.
Thanks, Bill Murray, for that clip. That was from Groundhog Day.
While I can do without the super cold, I would like to have a substantial snowfall before the winter's over. It would be nice.
Yeah, have a couple days of snow come down on us and allow us to have those great snow days.
That would be awesome.
It's the first time in years I've actually had a job that didn't require me to work in 36 inches of snow.
And this year will be the first year we don't get it.
Yeah. As luck would have it, that'll probably be the case. Did you see the handler for Punxsutawney Phil actually got bitten in the ear?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to be woken up before I need it to be, as you well know. I'd probably bite him, too.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of had that one coming. In Doctor Who news, LEGO has announced they will be putting out a Doctor Who-themed LEGO playset. In a video today, LEGO announced it will be producing an official Doctor Who and Companions set based on the outpouring of support for fan proposal made in last year. Also, they will be putting out a WALL-E set. Now, this kind of hits home for me on the other side of the spectrum. LEGO, in 2012... rejected the idea to use the Firefly from Serenity and Firefly, the space shuttle, and the characters as a LEGO set. And it was already funded. They had over 10,000 supporters, which is the requirement for LEGO to take a look at it. LEGO later went on to say that the reason they rejected the idea was because one of the characters was a registered companion on the TV show. In short, they were a prostitute.
But that tells me they didn't actually watch the show because there was a difference between a companion and a whore. She was not a whore.
No, by far not a whore. She was one of the best characters, female characters on that on the ship. And the geek in me cries out, knowing that LEGO will not officially support it. Now, there is a hack available. It's a bunch of different parts that are custom fabricated, and they'll do the job quite well. They are currently out of stock and have been for the last 6 months. But if you're interested in Firefly and want to get the Serenity, the spaceship from the series, go ahead and go to the show notes, and we've got a link there to it. It's wicked cool.
Sounds cool. A little pricey, though.
It is. It's over $300.
But there again, Legos are outrageous anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I used to play with them all the time.
Never did.
Aw, what's wrong with you?
I've paid my dues. I've bought enough of them for my kid.
Yeah.
And it looks as though Microsoft has decided to go ahead and launch their Office 2016 touch preview for Windows 10.
They've made it
available. If you have a Windows 10 technical preview, you can go ahead and download it and give it a whirl. It's Microsoft Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. And you don't have to touch your keyboard. You can do it all right on the screen if you have a desktop or a laptop that has that capability.
Yeah. It looks really cool. I can't wait to try it out. I am a little hesitant, though. I don't typically like to use my touchscreen, and a program designed for touch isn't going to be quite nice for my desktop that's running Windows 10 and also my laptop. I'll definitely check it out, and I'll let you guys know what I think of it. But more interesting is the fact that, and don't worry, we tie this all back into Microsoft later on. Raspberry Pi is a micro form factor computer. It's a bare bones motherboard. It has a built-in network cable. It's got tons of USB. It's got HDMI. It's got a lot of stuff, and it's all built in. So if you've got the purpose for a micro form factor TV, for example, you want to hook a PC up to your television so you can stream Hulu and Netflix and all that, and you don't have to deal with Apple TV or an Android box or whatever, or a Roku. You can get this, and it runs a fully fledged version of Linux. Now, that's until this week. The Raspberry Pi 2 has been released. A, it's 6 times faster. B, it'll run Windows. That's right. Microsoft has announced that the Raspberry Pi 2 will run Windows 10. And even better, it'll do it for free. When Microsoft had their press announcement for Windows 10 back in January, they announced that computers or laptops with 10-inch screens or smaller will run Windows 10 for free. And because this has technically no screen, it kind of falls within that category. They are working with Raspberry Pi to get all of the hardware talking to the software properly, but this is going to be a really, really great PC for your television or for your automobile if you want to hack a computer directly into the back seat. And best part is it's $35. Just the board. You have to build a case. You have to do all that. It's rather hacky, but it looks really good, and I can't wait to get my hands on one. Hey, Carrie, what do you think about the idea of a micro form factor PC like this?
If you have a need for it, it's pretty cool considering it only costs $35, so why the hell not?
Very true. Totally agree on that one. And with that said, that's our headlines. Now it's time for everybody's favorite segment, the History Rewind. In 1884, the Oxford Dictionary made its debut. In 1887, Hollywood was officially registered as a community. This community was developed by Harvey Wilcox and his wife. The 160 acres of land were bought with the intent of it being a utopian-like community for devout Christians, where they could live a highly moral life free of vices such as alcohol.
Well, I don't think that went as planned.
No, I do not think it went as planned. In 1922, Ford buys Lincoln Motors. In 1938, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was released by Disney. In 1949, RCA introduced the 45 RPM record. Had a ton of those as a kid, still have some of them. In 1973, Elton John's Crocodile Rock hit number one on the Billboard charts. And in 1979, the Blues Brothers' Briefcase Full of Blues hit number one as well. In 1959, Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and JP the Big Bopper Richardson died in a plane crash. Oh, how they are missed. In 1975, Big Boy, also known as Antoine Andre Patton, was born. He's one half of the rap outfit known as Outkast. In punk news, 1979, Sid Vicious died. In 1983, Karen Carpenter went bye-bye. In 1996, Gene Kelly died. And in 2014, Philip Seymour Hoffman died. And that was the History Rewind. You know it's coming, Carrie. I ask it every time. How was your week?
So far, so good, I guess. Yours?
Been a little under the weather lately with my stomach, but on the upside, it's given me time to work on the studio, so can't really complain too much. Thank goodness for sick days.
There are always a plus.
So, as promised, we've got a really big interview for you guys today. Eustace Conway from History Channel's Mountain Men got on the line with me on Monday night, and we recorded an interview for the Prime show. Prior to the interview, we asked Eustace's fans on Facebook to send their questions in, and we spent the better part of about an hour answering a lot of their questions. So without further ado, let's get right into part one of the two-part interview. Today we're talking with world-renowned naturist, outdoorsman, and star of History Channel's Mountain Men, Eustace Conway. Eustace, good evening.
Good evening, Duff. How goes it?
Not too bad. It's been pretty cold and windy out here in Maryland. How about yourself?
Oh, pretty good. I'm enjoying life on the mountain here.
Yeah, it's beautiful out there. I've been out in North Carolina a few times. Haven't gotten the chance to meet you or go to Boone, but it's a delightful place to be.
Yeah, well, I hope you will come up and visit the preserve. That's more or less what I've dedicated my whole life to, is making a place where people can come and experience something that'll sort of light a fire under them and make them feel interested in getting back to our natural roots and connecting with nature. So if you come and visit, you'll be helping make my dream come true.
Well, I do think we can make that dream quite easily.
Cool.
I'd hoped to have some more time with you tonight, but I know it's rather late. We've got a bunch of questions for you sent in by fans. Before we get into them, I have one for myself. You ready?
Sure.
All right. At 17, you left home and moved into a teepee in the woods. What inspired this move, and how do you feel your life would be different if you remained in a suburban environment?
Well, first of all, I'd hate to imagine staying in a suburban environment. The time out in the forest and the wild places has meant so much to me, just super enrichment and lots of insight, that I wouldn't be the same person right now as an adult many, many years, decades later, if I hadn't made that move. So more or less as a child, I consider myself a child at 17, I just decided that I would want to live closer to nature, because I felt and sensed intuitively that getting closer to nature, there was something sacred, something special, something that would be revealing of something that was more meaningful in life, something more meaningful than just the plastic routine of the modern world. And sure enough, I feel like I did achieve and do on a daily basis achieve something that's so much more meaningful than if I had just gone down the path of pretty much what I would call it, illusionary existence. So I just was following my dreams, following something that I believed in, and part of that belief wasn't a super well thought out plan. It was just, I feel like getting closer to nature and to the roots of our heritage would be a good move and something that I would want to participate in. And the shortest story would be, I wanted to move away from meaninglessness and move towards a more meaningful life. And that's what I did, and that's what I do, and that's what I'm glad that I did. And living in a teepee, you know, I moved into a teepee, that was my house, and I lived in a teepee for 17 years and learned so much by living in that thin membrane of a house. It's just such a thin wall between myself and the elements, the beautiful wild that I surrounded myself with. And that teepee, as far as a material possession, we're quite a bit of material culture. Out of all the things I've had in my life, I feel that teepee and living close to nature like that through the use of that teepee, that's the best thing that I ever had.
Was it ever hard for you?
There were hardships and challenges, and like sometimes my fingers are so numb I couldn't feel them for hours and sometimes days, but you know, that I was so uberly inspired by the sense of freedom and adventure and just that entire catalyst of, wow, let's do this dream and make it happen and explore, find out what the real world is all about.
Wow.
And so that inspiration carried me beyond any hardship. So, yeah, there were a lot of hardships, but I don't really think of them as hardships. I just think of them as part of that passing right into reality.
I'm just kind of taken aback by listening to your story. I mean, I've watched the documentaries on you. You know, I am an avid fan of what you do. And just hearing you tell it is just an inspiring tale.
Well, thank you. I hope that I can live my life in such a way that it would be inspiring for other people. And definitely it's been an inspiration for me. And as I look back, you know, I feel like, wow, I really am happy that I made the choices that I did, and I'm happy that I'll never have to look back and regret that I didn't live the life that I believed was important and the way that I should do it.
Yeah. Well, again, it's the story of your life is great, and I think the best part is you're not even done yet. You've still got so much to offer.
Hopefully, yeah. I still live in the forest, still live naturally, and this is, well over 3 decades later.
Now it's time for the fun part. Your Facebook followers were asked to send in some questions for you, and they did come through. I know you're limited on time, so let's get right into our first question.
Okay.
Kristen Villa asks, how did you originally afford to become off-grid?
Well, the beauty of that is you can become off-grid just by walking into the most remote place that you can find. So you just turn away from lights and you walk. So it doesn't really cost much. It just takes a little courage and a little creativity sometimes. And you just have to sort of figure out how it works. But it's not something that you have to pay for. You don't sign up for the program and that kind of thing. So basically, like, living off the grid costs less than any other way of living in the world. Like, it's, in a lot of ways, you could say it costs nothing. It's for free. And that's a part of the freedom of our entire sort of like human rights of existence. Like a person should be allowed to live, and living off the grid just starts out by just living. It's only when you introduce the grid that you start like choosing to live that way. I guess that might seem strange or mind-boggling to all of the modern America that doesn't think of there being any other way, or would imagine like looking at my lifestyle and think it's weird or something. But for me, I've lived this way for so many decades that this is my normal. So even though I'm a subculture and abnormal to most folks, this is just what makes sense to me. That's one reason I do it. It just makes sense.
So what you're saying is I'm the weird one because I'm sitting in a recording studio.
Well, I didn't say that.
I said it for you, Eustace.
Well, you know, we have all different ways of living. But if you look at humanity through the greatest amount of time since the very first days of human existence, the way I'm living and have lived my life by choice, which is completely different than all of my peers, it is lined up all of our ancestral ways of life. And really the way that most all the folks, like 99.9% of the population in America today, live is very foreign, very different to all of our ancestors. It's an extremely different, unusual, and kind of new way of living that we have right now with all of the, like, quote, modern conveniences, modern technology, a lot of it based on electricity. And it's the kind of thing where we become very dependent on a lot of stuff, a lot of infrastructure that's more complicated than a simple common man can walk out and acquire for free. And if you break it down, that's really one of the main things is living off the grid is living naturally, and someone that has just a very basic education can get everything they want and need for free. Mm. And the life is much more fulfilling and meaningful. And what better insurance policy to truly like ensure that you're going to be okay is that you can get anything and everything you want for free all the time naturally. You have to put a little work into it. It's not like somebody's out there feeding you grapes and fanning you. but if you just look around, you find food, you find water, you can make your clothing, you can make your shelter, you can just pick up rocks and sticks and make your own building with it. You know, that's what I've done for many, many years, and I've reflected on it for decades about our ancestral lifeways and realized that they had a truer sense of freedom and empowerment than anything most Americans can even imagine, much less have.
Okay. Well, there's got to be something to be said for being resourceful. You have to be resourceful. And from my take on you, I would definitely say that you're one of the most resourceful men in real life that I've ever seen.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it just goes with the territory. It's a base foundation. You have to be resourceful. You have to look around and figure out how to make it work. And that has to do with problem solving, paying attention, thinking. And all of those are good things, and you learn a lot more about them to the point where they're just the normal thread of your life, because that's sort of what it takes to live naturally and off the grid. But if you go back to Kristen Villa's question, how did I afford to do it? It's not a money thing. You don't have to afford to it. You just have to sort of have trust. You have to have courage. You have to believe that you can. And really, if I was going to advise Krista, like say, maybe that person is interested in doing it and following this path, well, for best success, I wouldn't just stop cold turkey what you're familiar with, but I would start exercising and trying out this possibility. Like within the safety of your own home, turn off your lights one day. And let your eyes adjust and realize that you can actually do pretty well just with natural light, and that you're not going to die if you don't have electricity, you know. And, you know, learn to build a fire, learn to put on more clothes. There's a lot of really simple, basic things that don't cost anything that give you more freedom and more meaning and more empowerment. And these are essential aspects to a fulfilled, healthy human being. And unfortunately, they're severely lacking, like a deficiency in the modern American lifestyle.
Hmm. Well, it's a great answer to a great question. You ready for the next one?
Sure. Yeah, let's go on.
All right. This is a two-part question. Angela Davis and Eric Burton want to know, Eustace, is Turtle Island in trust to you, or do you own it?
Well, in some ways, it owns me, but basically, it's a piece of land that I just sort of staked out and said, you know, I'm going to keep this place from getting torn up, corrupt, and developed like everything I've seen going on and all the old-timer traditional mentors told me about, you know, everything that I would hear. There was always this story, a common story to all of the many elders that I was attracted to, and they would talk about how the farms were developed and sold and concrete poured and trees cut down and changed the shape of nature. And so I wanted to make a stand and set an example of taking a place, and in fact I imagined that eventually it would be an island, not a piece of land with water around it like we often think of, but a wild place, a pocket of original, natural, healthy, balanced density in a sea of overdevelopment. And, even just sort of more or less in my belief system, basically encroached upon by a sea of insanity, which is what I feel is a lot of our modern ways kind of fit in that category. But as far as just really short modern answer and modern legal terms, I purchased hundreds of acres of land, often like 5 acres here and 10 acres there and a 20-acre tract here and a 107-acre tract here and that kind of thing, and put it together to where I personally own over 500 acres, and I have other friends like my friend Preston Roberts and his wife Kathleen. They own a large tract contiguous with mine, and other friends have purchased land to amass like basically a private wildlife preserve.
Okay, so it's like a cooperative.
That's right, yeah. And okay. I don't have a lot of people involved. I just have a few people, and every piece of land that we have and every person involved is an essential part of it. So, yeah, it's a bit of a cooperative. And part of their question there, too, Angela and Eric ask, like, if I have no children, who will inherit Turtle Island? And right now I have it in my will to go to a dear friend that I believe will carry on the tradition of it. It's all about keeping on going. Basically, I've started out realizing that the project that I envision is well beyond one man's lifetime. So this is a project that I'm dedicating and spending my life on that should go on for years and years and hopefully for many, many lifetimes, so that 400, 500 years from now, this place we have named Turtle Island will be a healthy gem and a jewel of natural sort of heritage and a healthy, balanced ecosystem that someone can get a sense for what a tree looks like and what it looks like to have the diversity in a deep forest. So okay. It's a dream, and I've just more or less worked passionately so far to get it started, and feel like I'm still in the infancy of the project, even though I've come a long way from when it was only a dream in my head. But still feel like there's several lifetimes to go to get it to where it's close to where I want it to be.
Okay. Well, that brings us to our next question. Eric also wants to know, how long do you think you can maintain Turtle Island and your lifestyle?
Well, I think I could maintain my lifestyle as long as, by nature standards, I could live until I die all of my life. But the government really doesn't like people having freedom or independence or a sustainable lifestyle. They kind of want you to be dependent on them and live in fear, and that kind of gives them empowerment. And so the government likes to have power over you, at least the one that I've been observing in our country here during my lifetime. And so the government might start saying it's illegal to live naturally and healthily. For instance, they came in with search warrant and armed guards and a huge convoy of inspectors and told me that it was unacceptable and illegal for me to share the natural American heritage lifestyle of building buildings with materials that I gathered from the land. They told me that my log cabins were illegal, that I couldn't put rocks underneath them for a foundation. They said I had to have cinder blocks. I was like, well, sir, I can take my fist and knock it right through a cinder block. I don't think you or I are going to take our fist and knock it through one of these rocks that's holding up this house. Like, what do you think that the whole term rock solid foundation comes from? That's based on rocks.
And exactly.
Yeah, you say, well, you just can't have a building like this. I said, well, what do you think the White House is sitting on? I think all of the old buildings. And then sort of the part of the ideas was it's not safe and it won't last. I was like, what do you think all the old buildings, every single old building in North America is sitting on? It's rocks. And yeah. So, but it didn't go very far because it's very limited perspective of understanding. Sort of if it wasn't right there in the the short and narrow paragraph in the rule book, it was unacceptable. So going back to the question, how long can I live this way? Well, it just depends on how long the government will allow us to just live in a healthy fashion, you know, and that's really a big question because they're already severely encroaching on just basic things, just what I would consider like human freedoms to be able to live on a piece of land. Like if you don't pay taxes on that piece of land, you have to get off of it. Even if you like quote own it, it's sort of like a fantasy or a fallacy to really own the land, because as soon as you quit paying taxes, which is more like rent,
yeah,
they're going to kick you off your own land because you don't really own it. It's just a big sort of fantasy. So basically, I could talk about that for hours and hours about getting right down to breaking it down about what's going on. But if the government would leave me and other people alone that want to live naturally with American heritage freedom, we could go on and on forever. And in fact, if people lived naturally, it would perpetuate forever. And the odd irony is, if we live by modern American standards, well, we are killing the earth.
Yeah.
So once you kill the earth, your lifestyle is going to end, you know. So good question. I appreciate Eric's interest in that.
Yeah, very good question. Now, right now, it's February. It's cold, bitterly so, depending on where you are. Steve Williams asks, what do you do in the winter to help pass the time?
Well, my lifestyle, especially me forging out, creating an education center with almost impossible zero budget. Actually, I'd say it is impossible. I'm just doing it anyway. But there is always so much work to be done, even if it's like sharpening a knife or braiding the end of a rope or oiling a snap for the horse's harness or sewing up socks or putting a patch on my pants, communicating with somebody that wants some help on something, and on and on and on and on and on. There's like, I think part of what I'm reading in that question is like, how do you get through all that empty time? It's like,
what empty time?
Yeah, there is no empty time. I wish I could find such a creature.
It's kind of like running a business. You don't find any spare time whatsoever.
Yeah, the same. And that's sort of what it is with my lifestyle, because I'm not just living the romantic life in nature. I'm living the life in nature and making it possible for thousands of other people to come to the education center, Turtle Island Preserve, and also learn. So I'm hiring staff, managing staff, unfortunately firing staff. I'm trying to figure out how to make ends meet with a super limited budget, and doing maintenance, whether it's a hole in the roof or just a thousand different things, you know.
Hope you guys enjoyed part one of that interview. Part two will be released on episode 10, which should be recorded and aired next Wednesday. I must say, I thoroughly enjoyed interviewing Eustace. He is such a genuine person.
He seems pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait until we can get a chance to head on down to Boone, North Carolina, and go meet him for ourselves. All right, we're not going to do much commentary to speak of this week because we did have the interview. So why do you say we get right into the winners of the week?
Alrighty then.
All right. Number one on the list is Larry Leroy Floyd from Ocala, Florida. The Smoking Gun reports that this joker tried, or I don't know, possibly succeeded in circumcising his brother-in-law's one-year-old child. I'm sorry, but the words, "Bro, I tried to circumcise him," should never come out of anyone's mouth, even a doctor, because doctors shouldn't say bro.
It makes you wonder why the father felt comfortable even leaving him with him.
I don't know. The mugshot of this character looks hysterical. He's like, what you talk about, Willis? He's got that mentality. You can just see it in his face. He is a complete and utter moron. And that's why he gets first prize for the Winner of the Week award.
And our next winner is from Seattle, obviously going to be a huge Seattle Seahawks fan. The gentleman already had a Seahawks tattoo, so he figured, well, they're back in the Super Bowl, let me get a little bit added to it. Well, he did that by adding back-to-back champions and two Lombardi trophies, all in the hopes that his team was going to win. Well, as everyone knows, no such luck. And he's prepared to just keep it, and maybe somewhere down the line they will win two of them back-to-back. Doesn't say anything on there about the year, so he should be covered, as long as they can do it at least once.
Yeah, Mr. OC should be keeping his fingers crossed for that one. And our number three winner of the week goes out to a nameless truck driver in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Authorities say his trailer crashed on Interstate 20 because the driver lost control while he was trying to pull out one of his teeth. Try and try and try again, and he succeeded. When the cops got on scene, they asked what happened, and he had his tooth in his shirt pocket, and he pulled it out, and he told the cops what he was doing. Luckily, no one was hurt, but we're still giving him the award because this guy has no concern for human life, and he's an utter idiot. With that said, well, at least he pulled his tooth, and it's probably no longer hurting. So,
guess he had to do what he had to do.
All right. Hey, Carrie, want to get some free Rogue Intel swag?
You know, but shirts, of course.
Shirts. Sometimes, you know, sometime in the future, hats, hoodies, bumper stickers, all that good stuff.
Free is awesome.
Well, hopefully you guys agree. If you become a patron of Rogue Intel, you'll score some goodies like founding follower t-shirts, awesome packets, and more. Plus, you'll be helping us continue to make entertaining podcasts like this one. Head over to patreon.com/rogueintel. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Sign up for as little as $1 a month to help us out. We thank you for your patronage. Well, it's been a busy week, and we've still got more to do. We've got some good news. I got together with Morindeer over the weekend, and we decided we're going to start producing some more content for you guys. So with that said, Mind of Morindeer, one of the podcasts on our network, is going to 4 times a week.
Ooh.
Yeah, so you get to hear his uncensored take on life. I tell you, he's a friend of mine. You know, we work together for Rogue Intel. But I listen to his podcast and I'm constantly entertained. If you're not a fan of foul language, you might want to stay away from this, but it's not overly used. So keep that in mind. If you like honest commentary, definitely check him out at rogueintel.com/shows/mindofmorindeer. Also, we're going to start a weekend edition of Rogue Intel Prime. So you'll hear me and our new host, Stephanie, alongside Morindeer himself. We're going to be triple teaming the news and commentary just like we always do. So be on the lookout for that on Saturday afternoon. I'd like to thank you for coming by and listening to us today, and we hope you have a great time. I'm Duff.
I'm Carrie.
And you've been listening to Rogue Intel Prime.